All right, good morning. It is another edition of the Morning After podcast on a Sunday that sees BYU eke out a victory. Utah get beat up in the second half, and Utah stay with another crazy win. Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole, Hans Olsen. Gentlemen, good morning. How is everybody?
Good morning, Scotty.
Good morning.
Doing great. Doing fantastic.
All right, Lloyd.
You sound like you're doing great, bud.
I'm doing fantastic.
You sound like a guy that did about 12 hours of radio yesterday.
I'm ready to talk more sports.
Some hot sports takes on a Sunday.
Just microwave them, dude.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Let's microwave these up.
All right. So like a Hot Pocket, one of those little sleeves that you stick in. Lloyd, you tell us where you want to start.
You know what? Let's start with what the hell just happened. How about that? How about we start with what the hell just happened?
How is Utah State doing this? Like, okay, I get it, two times or three. But it's incredible that Utah State every week it's something. It is some big storyline. It's some crazy win. What? How is this continuing to happen every week?
I don't know how a team can be 5-2 and still have given up more points than they've scored on the season.
That is amazing. So amazing. That's about as amazing as that. Did you see that stat with Wake Forest and their time of possession and how many points they scored?
Yeah.
I was like, what the heck? That's kind of like that.
By the way, so I'm assuming you guys watched the end of that game with the Keystone Cops, Colorado State just missed you.
Yeah,
because Utah State's hey, they're up by 9. They feel pretty good about things. You're up 9 with about 5 minutes left. You should win that game pretty handily. You just need to get get a stop, and even if the other team scores, you just got to make sure that they take a bunch of time. Well, Colorado State marches right down the field. They score a touchdown in a minute 20. Utah State picks up one first down, and then it's 3rd and 3. And if they get that first down, that's over. Colorado State's used all their timeouts. And unfortunately, they're unable to do so. So they punt. And then Colorado State gets all the way down to the Aggie 20-yard line. And they got the first down. So the clock is stopped for a moment. And then, you know, you have time to go down there, spike it, get your field goal unit in. Well, according to Colorado State coach, the field goal unit just came on the field. And, so they look like they're,
oh my gosh.
It looks awful. So they're, you got about 20 dudes out on the field at the same time while they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. Finally, they get settled in, and the dude misses the field goal and that ends the game.
Wasn't the kicker just yelling at the offense to get off the field?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'll bet you that's what everybody loves to hear, is the great kicker saying, get off the field, guys! Fucker!
Oh, my gosh. Like, there are a few things in the world of football. It's like, that's a fireable offense. Having your field goal team rushing onto the field when you should be spiking it, giving everybody time. But when you have that ability and that doesn't happen, it's unbelievable. But it just lines up with everything that's happened for Utah State this year. Like, Blake Anderson has brought this touch of magic with him to Utah State. And these wins are fantastic. And this season has been an absolute blast to watch. But can it hold up? You know, can you keep winning this way?
Well, I would say no. Usually the football gods find a way to kind of even things out a little bit, but their schedule is, I mean, they got Hawaii coming in. Now, granted, UNLV wasn't a good team, and that was a come from behind, need a drive to win. So I would assume that every game going forward is going to be like this, but they don't have Nevada. They don't have Fresno. They don't have San Diego State. Air Force and Boise and Colorado State, the three best teams in the division, are already in the rearview mirror. So they've got New Mexico. They've got New Mexico State. They've got Hawaii. The schedule and San Jose State, which is a good team, probably the best team remaining on their schedule, but yeah, no, this lines up quite nicely for them. And now they have an inside track to win in a division title.
That's crazy to think, because I mean, there was a thought that it's going to be a tough year for Blake Anderson, and
sure.
And I know we picked him to go, to be bowl eligible, but I didn't think it could be by much more than I thought. They'd probably have 6 wins, they'd be just barely bowl eligible, maybe by a win more possibly. And here they are looking at, I mean, all of a sudden, like an 8-9 game season, win season is right there.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of. I mean, hey, look, I love every second of it. These calls are taking years off my life, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how's your ticker? How about your ticker? How's your ticker like?
Not great, Bob. Not great. I did drop a "What the hell just happened" again, just because it was Colorado State and it was crazy, and why not? Because I think it certainly was apropos for the moment. All right. Ready to shift gears? Let's talk a little Utah. Hands, what the hell just happened?
Oh, man. How many times have you guys, I was trying to think of this last night during the post-game show. How many times have you, in the 16 years or 15 years of Kyle Whittingham being the head coach, have you seen special teams be such an issue and be a reason for multiple losses? And I'm not totally blaming a blocked punt that was returned for a touchdown on the loss, but that blocked punt came at the beginning of the second half after Oregon State had gone on an incredible drive and got it to 24-21. They got within one possession score, 24-21, it was a beautiful seam route that they hit. It was like 15, 18 yards on a seam and a gorgeous like route tree that was drawn up. And then Oregon State holds Utah, forces them to punt. The second line or the second blocking line, they just get blown up. They block that punt. They scoop it up and take it in for 7 points and take the lead at that point, 28-24. And to me, that was the moment. That was, everything had turned. Your fans in Corvallis were going nuts, and Oregon State started to really believe, and the momentum completely shifted. And at that point, it was Oregon State's game. But I can't remember, you guys, think about all the things we've seen with this Utah special teams this year. The kick return for a touchdown for Weber State, missed extra points, multiple missed field goals, including another missed field goal in this game. It just feels like there has been one blunder after the other. And guys, I'm sure you were watching this. You saw that there was another blocked punt that was actually called back because Oregon State had double numbers on the field, which is
bizarre. I've never seen anything like it. I was like, what?
Speaking of Keystone Cops, Scotty, you've got guys almost like, it's just crazy. But there was another blocked punt. When's the last time you guys saw this kind of mess with special teams for the University of Utah?
That'd be the fifth of never. No, you just don't see it ever. At any
never,
point.
And I'm not going to lie. I kept watching. I watched that both of those a couple times. I'm like, man, he's like really slow to get that. So I don't know if it's all. If you tell me, man, did it seem like he's really slow to get that ball off?
He
did slow motion.
It did feel slow. Coach Whittingham addressed it after the game in the post game press conference. He addressed it. And he said that he felt like there was enough time for that punt to get off. But I don't know. I don't know what's going on with this punter. I don't know what happened to the punt team. It's just the whole thing is so bizarre to have two blocked punts and one that went for a touchdown. And so I've got an issue with that. There was another issue when Oregon State took the momentum back off of that block punt for a touchdown. It wasn't too long later, maybe five, 6 minutes in the clock later, Devin Lloyd breaks through the line, drops his helmet on Chance Nolan, and gets booted for targeting. It's probably the right call. I mean, he did drop his helmet. If you're just going letter of the law for targeting, it's probably the right call. But Devin Lloyd ends up missing the remainder of the second half of that game. And when you had Oregon State doing what they were doing with the run game, just continually pounding, missing one of the top three linebackers in the country at that point is not a good thing. And that caused problems.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't get me wrong, Devin Lloyd, he's a difference maker. He's your best player in that defense. But the way they had that Oregon State offense had Utah's defense so off balance. Like,
yeah, you're right. They got without Devin, you're right. Yeah,
I mean, it was. I don't know if they're going to stop him regardless, because they had him. I mean, that end around that they kept running was. Every time they handed it off to that receiver,
what you've just said,
right away you knew it was going to go for six, because there was nobody that was held contained over on that side.
It's weird. It was weird. And then finally, Scotty, and I'm just getting right to the point on the issues. There were two fourth down attempts inside the 3 yard line that were stopped. And one of them was in a critical moment when you had to have it. It was fourth and goal on the 3. And Utah attempted to get it out to the flats to Britton Covey. And it was kind of in Britton's hand, but it was well defended by Oregon State. The other one was in the flats to Brant Keithy. Neither one of them were run or zone read, which to me, you know, if you're on the 2 yard line, you fire it back and you pause on a mesh point 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, that doesn't make sense to me either. Either go downhill, hard-nosed, or try to get it out to the edges. I'm not overly critical of the plays that they went to. Really, I really didn't mind them at all. Now, they didn't work, so Utah fans are going to be beside themselves, and they're going to question my opinion on that. But I would rather that than shoot it back in a shotgun on a zone read mesh point and allow Oregon State, who's got one of the best run defenses in the country and had showed that they had an ability to stop short yardage stuff. And Utah tried to get out to the outsides to Brant Keithy and to Britton Covey. They're two top receiving threats. I'm not going to overly wrong them for that, but Oregon State deserves credit. You saw those plays.
Oh, yeah.
They were in the right place. Yep. They were hustling, and they got those stops. So those are really three or four things that, in my opinion, directly led to the 42-34 loss that they had.
I look at that first drive inside the 5, and you get it down to about the 2.5, and then it's pass. I don't, you know, I would have still liked to take in another crack or two with the run game. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, you're going right into that teeth of that defense. That's pretty doggone good. It just seems like they gave up on the run game really quick when they were down there.
The second one I understand a little bit more, because they didn't have Tavian Thomas. That first time, I believe they did have Tavian Thomas still. He wasn't injured yet when they got stopped the first time. Am I wrong? I think they still had. I don't think Tavian Thomas was out yet.
No, he was out there.
So at least at that point, that's when you, and that was the one where they threw it to the fullback the first time, and it was the guy tripped, whether it was a bad throw.
A bad throw.
Looked like a bad throw. They had him wide open, and then, you know, and then the Keithy one on fourth. But when you have Tavian Thomas, you got at least, let's get, you know, you have to at least give it a try to maybe on one of the downs, try to see if you can't run it in there.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that if you got two downs, three downs from that range.
Right.
Sure. You know, try to punch it in. But I don't know, man. Scratching my head on that. There were a lot of impressive things and a lot of great moments for Utah. That first drive that they came out with was awesome. Tavian Thomas got the first carries in that one. And they came out with physicality. and ended up with a touchdown, dropped it off in the flats to Makai Bernard, and it was just a great drive that ended with 7 points to start this game. And then you guys saw the first defensive stand or the first defensive series. Mika Tafua had a huge TFL, and then he followed that up with a strip sack, and Oregon State did recover it, but Mika Tafua started this game out on fire, and Utah started this game out on fire, came out with another great drive, got into the end zone with it was blowing coverage on Keithy, and he ended up in the back of Oregon State's end zone, completely uncovered. And Utah takes a quick 14-0 lead, looked completely aggressive, focused, and ready to win this game. Credit to Oregon State. They made some huge special teams plays. They had two huge stops on fourth and short for the goal, and they went and earned this win. That was impressive.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of go ahead, Lloyd.
What do you guys see? Okay, just real quick, back to those fourth down tries. Because, I mean, that's 6 points. That's 6 points that probably puts yourself in a different position later in the game. What do you think as far as the aggression of trying to get, you know, the six versus kicking the field goal? Because I kept thinking to myself, I was like, God, those points are so valuable. And, and the way this game was going, like, you never know, when it's going to be a 3-point game and you might need it. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, I get it. Hindsight 2020, but I feel like there's been a couple of games now where you thought to yourself, the San Diego State one being one of those, where he didn't kick the field goal and they went for it on the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
And those 3 points would have been the difference of not going to overtime.
So I don't know how much that has to do with Kyle Whittingham's faith in the kickers. I don't know. Noyes doesn't. I don't know if he just feels like they missed extra points. Of course, there'd be little chip shots. Or if he was thinking in his mind, I'd rather risk it and try to get the seven. But, you know, I was looking at the situation that they were in where it was a 2-score lead for Oregon State when they were fourth and goal on the three. And I can't remember how much time was left.
11. They were down 11,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, you did need the field goal. You also needed a touchdown with a 2-point conversion. And my thought, when they were sitting in that short yardage, my thought was, you have as good a chance to get a touchdown right now as you will if you get the onside kick and you've got short time and you're trying to get in. Like, if you give me that opportunity, you can go get your 8 points right now, and I'm putting you on the 2.5-yard line, the 3-yard line. Basically, it's a 2-point conversion. I'm going to take my shot with it. And then I can try to hit my 3 points from a 45-yard field goal. I'll get my 3 points from 40 some odd yards. But I need to get my touchdown from this 2.5-yard mark.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
So I don't have a real issue with it. I'm not second guessing their decision to go for either one of those fourths. And I'm not even second guessing the play calls. I'm just more impressed with what Oregon State did defensively. And maybe that's not the answer Utah fans want to hear. But sometimes a defense just shows up. Oregon State did.
I will second guess the triple reverse on first down. I'll second guess that one.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, by the time you hand the triple.
I call that one the triple Luddy.
By the time you hand that triple off, you know, you're working yourself about 5 yards deeper. And you just keep working back and back and back. And
oh, you wreck a drive, by the way, because that was first down. All the
yeah, that's the other thing, too. You just eliminate all momentum with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was painful. And now it's tough because I don't want to be critical of Andy Ludwig and be like, he's outthinking himself when we're saying, boy, this offense has looked really vanilla.
Yep.
Against San Diego State and BYU. And now we're like, well Andy, just why don't you just run your staples? If I'm Andy, I'm like, hey, why don't you guys all take a long walk off a very short pier and shut your mouth?
Yep.
Because you're telling me to be more creative, and now you're telling me that I'm too creative. And so I'm struggling to wrong them on creativity either, because he runs one flea flicker that he didn't call, and it goes for a touchdown in a big moment a week ago against Arizona State. Wasn't that against Arizona State?
The flea flicker for a
touchdown before the half.
Yep.
No, that was USC.
No, yeah, that's right. It was USC. No, good.
It was USC. Yeah. and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, that's kind of fun. He's getting a little more creative, and then it's a triple reverse that ends for an 8-yard loss, and that was pretty brutal. But I just don't feel right going on the attack on it for one reason or the other.
So special teams is kind of the theme of the weekend. You know, Utah State with Colorado State's mess. Utah can't sees kicks get blocked, and then BYU, thankfully, Washington State had a botched extra point attempt, or we might see overtime in that game, and BYU's able to win that game 21-19. A game that, frankly, was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be, and these guys rallied. I mean, props to Washington State. You can tell this team had been through it a little bit and felt like they needed to go out there and play well, and I think you got a pretty inspired effort by Washington State, Hans.
It was a really good effort by Washington State, but I would like to stand and celebrate Aaron Roderick in the second half of this game, finally putting everything aside and just saying, all right, go ahead, Algier. Let's bring this thing up. Katoa, Algier, just go. Of course, it was all Algier. Katoa had a really nice touchdown to start things off, but Tyler Algier in the second half of that game went bonkers. And the hard thing is I look back through the last three games and I think to myself, how bonkers could he have been against Boise State, against Baylor, and now against Washington State? Maybe he wasn't as healthy against Boise State or Baylor. Maybe there was some reason that it was only 15 carries against Baylor. But guys, you had to deal with me all week, and you could tell that I was just riddled with anxiety over BYU maybe not forcing the run against Washington State when they needed to. I kept thinking to myself, why wouldn't you? I hope that they don't try to outthink themselves and put this in Jaren Hall's hands. Just put it in Algier's hands. Run the ball. And he went for nearly 200 yards and two touchdowns. Averaged 6 yards a carry on 32 carries. He was fantastic. And it's exactly what you needed to see from BYU against Washington State. And I don't care if Virginia is a little bit better at stopping the run. You've got to do this against Bronco Mendenhall coming up next week. Even I know Bronco's going to have run-stop schemes put in place, but you've got to do what you just did against Washington State.
It's still who you are, and you're spot on. It's who you are, and I thought the mix between the run and the pass was a lot better. Hell, I would have probably been fine with him getting the ball 40 times because that's how big of a beast he is. I know you can't because that's such a heavy workload, but the offense goes as he goes. That's just how it is, and that's how it needs to be played.
I'm with you on this, Hans, 100%, because it just I don't know if there was a conversation. I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, but it just felt like, hey, look, they can't stop this guy. Let's give it to him and let's do the thing. And Washington State's trying desperately to get off the field, and it's just first down, first down, first down, and the game. I mean, Washington State had an opportunity to get the ball back and go down and try to win the game with a field goal. And to me, there's no, I mean, we all get all like fired up when we watch these game winning drives and these come from behind performances. But what I really admire in football is when a team's up, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points, a one possession game, and they get the ball with 3.5, 4 minutes left, and they need to run out the clock, and they never give the ball back. I mean, when usually your defense knows exactly what's coming, they're going to run the ball because they want to keep the clock moving, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And you get off the field, and that opposing offense never touches the field. To me, that's the biggest middle finger that you can have in sports, when it's just like, no, you're not getting the ball back, and you know we're going to run it, and you still can't stop it. And BYU did that. I mean, they really flexed when they needed to down the stretch in that game and said, no, you're not getting the ball back. Delora's not going to touch this ball again. We're going to end it right here, and with a victory formation, and this game's going to be over. I thought that was really impressive to see.
so good to see. And not only did you have that, and which was great, you guys watched that 2-point conversion attempt that Washington State went out there. They get that 2-point conversion, and we're looking at overtime. And who knows what happens in that stadium if they're able to hit this 2-point conversion. And much like we were just talking about Utah and the triple reverse, Washington State comes out with a reverse, and it fails. The edge is held. Everybody stayed home. Great discipline. I mean, I know that Elisa Tuiaki, the defensive coordinator for BYU, takes a lot of heat, but man, he and Ed Lamb and Kalani Sitake, they had everybody staying home, which is really tough to do in that 2-point conversion when you've got Borgi on the field and you're thinking, oh man, there's so much different potential here. And that leverage back inside forced Washington State to try to flick it into the end zone or something, and they missed the 2-point conversion. That was a great defensive moment. An epic defensive moment for BYU, and it allowed the state of Utah to pull the full sweep on Washington State, which, you know, I know is really, in my opinion, that's a big thing. Getting 3 wins here in the state of Utah against a Washington State team that I think is okay, but without their coaches, there were some issues there too.
Yeah, you can see that.
Props to them for actually putting, because I thought there was a good chance BYU could run away with this thing. Like,
yeah,
considering the turmoil they were dealing with, and somehow those coaches were able to get them to rally, and that was actually pretty impressive.
By the way, it's good to see Jaren Hall back and playing like Jaren Hall. I mean, you can tell. And I don't know, Hans, if that was you speculating or if you'd had some chats with some people, but he looks so much healthier than what we saw last week. And I think that extra week really did him a lot of good. And you kind of anticipated that he was going to look a lot better.
I figured that would be the case. And I know a lot of good people there were hoping that it would be the case and felt like it'd be the case. And it was nice. 15-20 for 143 yards. That's the line I wanted to see against Washington State. And then Tyler Allgeier near 200 yards. That's the line I wanted to see.
Yep.
This ended up working in the second half the way I wanted it to work. But the first half, there were some moments. It was like, so how many times we're going to see Jaren pass on a first down? Because I love, in a first down situation against a Washington State team that can't stop the run, just give me my 5 yards, and then we'll open up playbooks on the second down. But there were a couple moments that were frustrating. I don't like passing on first down against teams that can't stop the run. But maybe they're anticipating the run. That coaching staff sees way more than I see, way more. And then in the second half, it went more the way I had hoped it would go.
Yeah.
Two things though. James Impey went out in this game in the second half. That worried me. He was on crutches, and I don't know how injured he is, but we'll be talking to him on Monday. And then Gunnar Romney went out, and Gunnar Romney obviously is a big weapon. And then guys, when we go over this game a little bit more in detail on Monday, I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I saw from Washington State that was an indicator that they really did miss their coaches. And we'll do more of that in detail on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's, you know, a couple of things brewing here that, for BYU, this Virginia game is going to be really fun to watch. That place is going to be rocking with Bronco coming back into town. He's been gone for a bit. You know, BYU's had players there for a long, long time, and maybe there's still a handful of guys. I mean, I think Joe Tukuafu may have played with Bronco in college at some point, but other than that, I don't know if there's a lot of guys that were ultimately recruited by Bronco that are on this team. So I don't know if it means a lot to players, but you know it's going to mean a lot to fans, and it's going to mean a lot to the BYU overall to see Bronco Mendenhall back in that stadium.
Second biggest game for BYU this year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Next to Utah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Do you feel like Lloyd, BYU's kind of righted the ship here? Do you feel a little bit better about where they're at, or do you still have some concerns after back-to-back losses and a close win against Washington State?
There might be a little bit of concern still. A little bit. I feel a little bit better. But I still... this Virginia game's, I think this Virginia game's going to be, this one's going to be tough. Both teams with a lot to play for here. You know, Broncos going to be fired up to get in there. But I'll tell you what, you get a win here, and I mean, that would be huge. To get a win against Bronco. Yes, the answer is yes. I do feel better. I'm feeling a little bit better.
You get a win here, and that ensures that you get 9 wins on the season.
Yep.
You get a win against Virginia. That ensures 9 wins. Gives you the possibility of 10 if you can finish things off this year against USC.
Which you should, because that USC team is, they're trash.
Yeah. But this Virginia team is currently riding a 4-game win streak, and they are versatile. They got a quarterback that works well in so many different ways. This Brennan Armstrong was really good. You guys saw 400 yards through the air yesterday and 4 touchdowns. How many times do you see a 400-yard passing game with 4 touchdowns through the air? It's to me, it's impressive. And they put up 240 yards rushing as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and Brennan Armstrong was responsible for 100 of that. So it's a very – think about that. He himself nearly had 500 yards of offense just by himself. 100 yards rushing, 396 yards passing, and was responsible for six total touchdowns. So I don't want to say it's just a one-man team, but – this Brennan Armstrong is going to be,
he's going to be a problem.
Real problem. He's going to be a real problem. There's no question.
Yeah. So we'll break that game coming up all next week. Of course, Utah in action as well. We'll break that game down and get you ready for Utah State welcoming in Hawaii as the Aggies can get bowl eligible with a win coming up on Saturday. And who knows what's going to happen every time they play the game of football. So, hey, by the way, how about this? Before we wrap up, congrats to Jay Hill and Weber State going on the road and knocking off number 2 Eastern Washington. You knew they were capable of beating anybody in the FCS ranks, and they went out and they did it yesterday.
Yeah, and they did it in with some of the most bizarre ways that you could do it. I mean, they had to fight. They had to fight their butts off, but they had, and if I'm not mistaken, I saw that they had 3 fake punts for first downs. Is that?
It's on the DVR. I'm going to go back and watch it. I've not had a chance to break it down yet.
Well, I believe, and I'm trying to look it up here, I believe that they had 3 fake punts for first downs. And they ended up with nearly 300 yards through the air. Bronson Barron had a much better game, and they had 213 yards on the ground. But that Eastern Washington's a good team. Beat them by 1 point. That was an undefeated team. We'll take it. Hey, Scotty, how does the playoffs work with FCS? Because, you know, I want to see this Weber State team, because they might get a little bit hot as the playoffs come around. But
yeah,
what are we like?
It's a tough, they've got a tough road to hoe because, all right, it's a lot like the NCAA tournament. Your conference champion gets an automatic bid, and then there's at-large spots. But they're really tough to come by. And I think right now you got Weber at 3-4 on the season.
Correct.
If they run the table, I got to imagine they'll be part of the conversation. But they're going to have to be perfect the rest of the way, and they're going to have to look really good in doing it. That Eastern win's going to help, but the loss to James Madison, the loss to Montana State, the loss to UC Davis, I mean, those are going to be really difficult losses to overcome. But hey, you know what? Go out there, win handily, really rally around that Eastern Washington win, and maybe they get an opportunity, but it's going to be really tough to do.
Well, they will finish the season 7-4. because they got Idaho State, Portland State, Southern Utah, and Northern Colorado to end the season. And they're better than those teams. Let's just say they do what we think that they can. They're going to be a 7-14. I think you're right. Even then, Scotty, yeah, it's going to be.
I don't think they get in.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough.
Yeah. And they,
which is a bummer.
And they deserve it. I mean, they deserve an opportunity to be there because I think they're one of the best teams in FCS football. I just don't think they needed to have won one of those three in the FCS ranks that they've lost. All right, gentlemen, enjoy your Sunday. We'll do it again tomorrow coming up at 10 a.m. or excuse me, not 10 a.m. Well, at high noon. Still getting used to the new hours. Hans Olsen, Lloyd Cole, Scott Girard. That's your Morning After podcast. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.